Justice is conscience. Not a personal conscience, but the conscience of the whole of humanity. And those who clearly recognize the voice of their own conscience usually recognize also the voice of justice. And that was said by Alexander Solzhenitsyn. Welcome to Surviving the Matrix, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Maxwell Egan. It's a pleasure to be with you once again, and I will be your host for the next hour. Now, as alluded to by Mr. Solzhenitsyn in the aforementioned quote, justice and conscience are indelibly intertwined. One simply cannot exist without the other. In fact, it is even quite conceivable to say that the two are each other, because where true conscience is present, we will also find justice. Because, of course, justice is defined by conscience. I used to have a saying that I used many years ago when I was younger. Well, maybe not a saying exactly, but kind of a self-awareness routine that I used to go through when I was conversing with people. And if I had something that I particularly wanted to say, you know, sometimes you're in a conversation and you really want to interject. There's some line you want to say. There's some point that you really wish to make with the people with whom you're conversing. You often don't know why. Sometimes you haven't even actually thought about the comment. You just know that it's something that you really want to say. Often you say it, and then after you've said it, you think, oh my God, why did I say that? Even though perhaps it felt quite good saying it at the moment that you did. But you regret it later because you realize that what you were saying wasn't really coming from conscience. It wasn't really coming from that which is just. And so before I would interject into any conversation, I used to always ask myself three questions about what I was about to say. Is it kind? Is it true? Is it necessary? And if I wasn't sure that it was all three of those things, then perhaps it was not worth saying at all. But really, you can cover all that in one question, can't you? And that is it just? Now, when we look at the world today, something that becomes glaringly noticeable above almost all other issues is the amount of injustice. And not only the injustice that's done in the bombing of foreign countries, in the jailing of people such as Chappelle Corby, but the injustice of the entire system itself and the injustices performed every day by people within the system. I mean, some of the things we see today are absolutely extraordinary. There's no other word for it. I recently saw a report, and I have it posted on the Crow House, of Marianne Godboldo, who stood up to protect her child from child services and essentially from the state, because the state wished to give the child psychotropic medication and behavior management medication. And when the mother stood up against the system for doing this, they literally sent a SWAT team and what looked like a suburban tank around to her house to extract the child from her possession. And you've really got to wonder at the mentality of the people that were carrying out this act. I mean, regardless of the fact that the state gave them the instructions that, okay, we've got a mother here who is not letting us give her child medication that the state demands that the child have, regardless of the wishes of the mother or the needs of the child. It's just what the state says, and I've got it here on this piece of paper that says we have to go around and extract this child from this woman. And look, if you were a police officer or you were part of the National Guard or whichever group it was, the SWAT team that was going and terrorizing this woman, when you looked at the paper and it displayed the amount of force that you had the ability to use to extract this child from this woman in order to medicate the child, would not conscience dictate that you question this order, question the forces from above who gave you this order? If they are telling you that you have authority to use this much firepower and this much heavy weaponry and this amount of officers to go and extract a child in order to forcefully medicate it, I mean, you would have to ask why. You simply would if you were in any state of conscience. So you've got to question why people would behave in this manner and how they would justify their actions, why they would think this way. And of course, when you look at it, what you find is that people think this way because they have been trained to think this way, because they have been trained to look and act externally from their own conscience. And it's very interesting to see how prevalent this is in our society. It's interesting to see how prevalent it is within the banking system, within the political system, within the police structure. All of these types of institutions act absolutely without empathy, without any conscience or justice whatsoever. And it's very, very telling to look at our legal system and see how unjust the legal system actually is. I mean, even when people go to court, they say, well, the court isn't about justice, it's about the law. But the law is created by people, and if the law is unjust, then what is it doing as a law? How can that be? How can we create a system of legal guidelines if these legal guidelines are unjust? How can we have a monetary system that is designed to perpetuate scarcity and have this system function within legal parameters and call it a just system? And how can people operate within these systems with any degree of conscience? And of course, the answer to that is that people do operate within these systems and they do justify their actions by the training that they've had and the beliefs they have of what is important, what is real within reality. And unfortunately, what most people perceive to be real within reality is essentially that which is unreal. They perceive the economic system and the set of rules and guidelines that have been imposed upon society by politicians and banking interests to be real, when in fact these things are the most fictional aspects of our whole social system, and they are the fictional aspects that have been so very instrumental in enslaving the population and in stealing and extracting everything that is real from the people and making it the property of the state. And what is the state? The state is the system of control that is in place that allows the people within the state to only ever have just the bare essentials of what they need in order to survive. And it trains them that if they want to achieve more than that, then they need to do it at the expense of the people around them, by profiting from the people around them and by controlling the people around them. Life is about power, life is about acquisition, and at the end of life, the one with the most wins. And this is the way the people within our society have unfortunately been trained to think. And so that is why we see such a stepping away from justice and away from conscience. We don't see justice and conscience anywhere within our system, not anywhere within our social systems, not anywhere within our business systems. We just don't see it within even our scholastic systems, our whole social hierarchy. And as I mentioned earlier, one of the most interesting parts about it is that we do not see any justice within the legal system, that which calls itself law, and which should be based on delivering that which is just. I mean, they call the government legal department the Justice Department, and it would seem that what they do in the Justice Department is, well, I suppose they keep all the justice to themselves. They keep it all there inside the building, and it would seem that none of it is ever really allowed to escape, because we certainly do not see any of it in operation within our social or legal structure. But really, folks, and something that I've been attempting to convey for 4 years now is that, is this not actually the fault of all the people within the system? I mean, if you're going to blame anybody, I mean, you can point the finger at the Illuminati, at the ruling elite, and all the people that have put all these structures in place, and you can blame them for putting them in place, but then you really have to look at the willingness of the population to buy into this fictional system. Because that's the thing. I mean, you've got to attempt to look at things from the perspective of the Illuminati or whatever name you would like to give to the people who are actually running things, the ruling elite. I mean, look at it from their perspective. Here you've got a whole race of people who are all too willing to participate in a system that is essentially fiction, that are all too willing to give up all self-responsibility in order to be looked after by what are essentially elected caretakers, that are all too willing to go to their mundane jobs every day of their lives. They never have any time to meditate, any time for self-reflection, any time to experience reality from the perspective they should be experiencing it from. No time to actually experience themselves and experience the world around them, experience and truly get to know the people around them. They're too busy running around collecting paper because they truly believe that the system is real and that they need to collect paper in order to pay to participate in a system that is essentially fiction. So you've got to ask yourself, how competent are these people? How intelligent are these people? How capable are these people of controlling their own lives? If they're willing to see the world from the perspective that they do, how competent are they? Are these not people who need looking after? And folks, I'm not sympathizing with the Illuminati here, and I'm not saying that they're the good guys or anything like that. I'm just suggesting that in order to understand why these systems of control were able to be sustained for so long, is because of the overall incompetence and the lack of self-responsibility that exists within a very, very large section of the population. And again, it's no good pointing the finger at them and blaming them, because this irresponsible mindset has been instilled into these people through the education system. I mean, these people are irresponsible because they've been trained to be irresponsible. I mean, admittedly, now people are beginning to wake up to how things actually work. More and more people are standing up to be responsible. And that's a very, very good thing, and that's how we will change things. But what I'm attempting to help you understand here is what the world looks like when you view it from the perspective of the ruling elite. I mean, honestly, folks, they must sit back in wonder and think, well, it doesn't matter what we do. These people just buy into it. They just go along with it. We can say anything we want. We can write down anything we want. We can create any sort of system of slavery that we want. And they'll just follow each other through the gates the way the sheep do when you lead them down the garden path to be slaughtered. But as I said, more people are waking up. And ultimately, folks, what it's all about is energy. And I keep coming back to this, I know, but it is true, because what it is all about is energy. Because if you are in the correct energetic state, then you suddenly don't need the system anymore. You're able to function on a completely different level. You're able to control your own reality. But you're only able to do that if you're in the correct energetic state and if you apply that energy to the world in which you live. And that is a huge problem that we've seen for so many years in the whole, if we could call it the spiritually awakened movement. You might call it the New Age movement, you might call it sections of different religious movements. But very often what we've seen within all of these movements is 90% of the truth, which has unfortunately then tended to culminate in a little bubble of spiritual narcissism. People get in the right energetic state and they get the correct understanding of reality, but then they fail to apply it to the world in which they live. We see jealousy with people. We see animosity with people. We see infighting, bickering, name-calling. We see invalidation of other people's perspectives within all of these movements. Even within the so-called truth movement, we see perspectives of my truth but not your truth. And we very often see people continuing to have stuff with other people. They have differences with other people. They have things they believe are wrong about other people. They have judgments of other people. And whether people are doing the right thing or the wrong thing, folks, it's not for you to judge. I mean, you may see that someone's doing the wrong thing, but that is their path. I'm not saying forgive them. What I'm saying is to love them and always do what is just. Always act the way your conscience tells you to act, but always make sure that action is in service to creation and proceeds in such a manner that it will do no harm to creation. And you can find, folks, that you can do this while at the same time maintaining your energetic state and maintaining a valid perspective of others. And look within yourself. When you find yourself doing things that aren't right or that you perceive to be wrong, or when you see yourself harvesting energy from another or behaving in a sociopathic manner, don't blame it on an inner demon or something. Just understand that this is part of yourself and understand why you have these feelings. Because you're having these feelings in order to learn about these feelings. When you do these things, if you're having a pang of conscience, and in order to deal with that attack of conscience, you go about manufacturing some idea of an inner demon that makes you do these things or something like that, then what's happening is you are realizing that you're doing the wrong thing. You know you're doing the wrong thing, and you are manufacturing this demonic entity within yourself in order to escape empathy. Because if you had real empathy, you would not do these things. You would actually be able to put yourself into the complete persona of the victim of your actions and feel what they feel. And you go halfway there and then you go, oh, I'm not going there. I guess I didn't mean to do it. It must have been a demon inside me. But it isn't a demon, folks. It's your way of blaming someone else for your actions. And it's a way of avoiding empathy. And as I've often said, the very fabric that makes up reality is compassion, and your interface with that fabric is empathy. So if you are in a state where you are manufacturing inner demons in order to maintain a state of denial of empathy, then all you're doing is being part of the problem, unfortunately. And there's no way to achieve spiritual growth, and there's no way you will change the world from acting within those parameters. You have to let the empathy in, folks. You have to feel the presence of others. You have to feel the validity of others. And once you do that, it may be a painful experience to begin with, but once you do it, then your whole world will change, and it will change in the blink of an eye. The world really is facing some very difficult issues, folks. It's facing some really important problems that need to be overcome. And there might be people out there that question, well, how are we going to deal with these problems? I mean, it's one thing to be aware of them. It's one thing to wake the population up. But how can you expect to change these problems from within the political system? How do you expect to be able to approach politicians and get them to undo the damage that they've done? And this is something that I've attempted to touch on quite often, folks, because the truth of the matter is that there is no way we can change things from within the parameters of this political system. And the truth is that the only way any effective change is ever going to be implemented is if that change comes from the people themselves. And the truth of the matter is that freedom lies in the perspective that in the face of unjust legislation, true action lies in mass civil disobedience. You see, that's the thing. It's legislation. It's the legal system that constructs these parameters that are designed really only to benefit the corporate system and to limit the power of the individual. And so what's required is for people to realize that these parameters are simply legal fiction, and that through actions of mass civil disobedience, we can negate such legislation through sheer weight of numbers. But we have to have a united community in order to do it. The only way really to unite the community is to educate the community, to inform the community, to let people know what's going on in the most positive and most empowering fashion that we are able to do so. As I've often said, you can't simply go and cry wolf or go and cry fear to people. You have to open doorways for them and show them a better way, and you need to lead by example. Show them how empowered you are and how much your life has changed because you have this information. And show them how easily change can actually be implemented through the power of community. Community is very strong, folks. People just do not realize how powerful community is if the community unites. And the community doesn't unite because everyone's always got stuff with their neighbors. They got stuff with the people down the road. It's all about social status. It's all about what they look like or how they dress or what their belief system is. All of this stuff, which never used to exist. 100 years ago, we didn't have any of that problem. 100 years ago, people kind of got along and they saw each other as valid, and everybody kind of knew that they had something to learn from the people that they encountered. And they wouldn't simply judge them as being invalid as soon as they saw them because they were dressed in a different way or they didn't like their haircut or something. All of this system of social judgment that we currently live under, this has all been presented to the people by the television. We only think this way because we're trained to think this way. I keep coming back to that as well, but it's so true, folks. And if you can see this when you look at other people, even if they are something that seems to be completely alien to you and they think in a way that is completely alien to your way of thinking, you've got to understand that they've been trained to be that way by all of the influences they've had in their life up to that point. And most of their understanding about reality has been based on a completely false perception of it, because it's the perception that's been presented to them through the scholastic and social systems, none of which is real. It's all based on legal fiction. It's all based on social standing and status and monetary gain and acquisition and all of this stuff, which is just there to keep the community divided. And all you have to do really is think about how little you know about the people that live around you to see how effective this methodology has been. But the fact is that being aware of it, just knowing that the system is there and knowing how it serves to control the thoughts of people, control the perception of people, that's truly half the battle, folks. Once you can see it there, then its workings become transparent. They really do. And as it says in The Matrix, folks, once you take the red pill, you just can't go back to sleep. Once you're awake, it's impossible to ever go back to sleep again. And that fact alone is why you need to be careful and tactful and positive and productive the way you present this information to people. Because you're presenting people with something that challenges their very perception of reality, and so you have to be showing them a better way and not a fearful way. There's no good screaming fear at people. You have to show them that there is a better way to do things than what we are currently doing, and help them understand that the only reason we are doing things this way is because of a system that has been put in place by our employees, but it's a system that is essentially fiction. And it's because we allow this fiction to control our lives that the world is heading to hell in a handbasket the way it currently is in 2012. Very interesting year, though, folks. Very interesting year. I'm expecting a lot of things to happen this year, and the energy of the times is absolutely palpable. You can almost taste the energy, and it would really seem like the rulers of the planet are in a state of absolute fear at the moment. They really, really seem to be so scared and so terrified of the amount of people that are waking up. And this is evident by the amount of new legislation they're bringing in. They're making it as tight as possible, as quick as possible, because they are in absolute fear of what the people may met out to the rulers once they are fully awakened to the prison that they live in. And of course, something that I've been attempting to help people understand is that there is no reason to actually do this. There's no reason to become violent in the face of this prison. There's no reason to have any type of violent revolution. All we actually need to do is to turn to each other, to turn to our communities and to grow our communities and ignore the fictional system that screams at us to do otherwise. I mean, they can stand there and scream at us all they want, folks, and eventually their throats will just get sore. And even if people are concerned about the huge police presence, well, there's a lot more people than there is police. And as long as you are not violent towards the police, and as long as you only ever display enough violence to repel the violence that is directed against you, eventually the police will give up. I really believe this. I mean, it might sound like I'm living in a dream world, but I truly believe it, folks, that you only need to express the amount of aggression that is needed to repel the aggression that's been brought against you. You don't need to then turn into the attacker, because once you do that, you become that which you have been fighting against. You've got to understand that the people who are attacking you are doing so because they've been trained to think that way. And again, you need to lead by example, and you need to show these people a better way. It's fascinating how most of them can't see it, actually. The bankers are a wonderful example of this, because here's these people who, most of them don't even understand how the money system works, and they're perpetuating this system of slavery. And ultimately, they're the ones who will suffer for the system that they're helping create. Because the money doesn't mean anything. It's not real. Their social standing, it's not real. It's just temporary. It's just a fictional system that's been put in place in order to put together the prison system that's been constructed. And it's going to be a very tight prison system if we allow it to be constructed. But the thing is that it's been constructed by all of the little people that work within it, because these people live in divided communities. So it always comes back to community. The whole thing always comes back to community. And that's why we don't need violence. We only need violence if we don't have community. But if we have community, and we have an aware and educated community, we don't need violence, because we can simply step away from the fiction and turn to embrace and to support each other. And I truly believe that the real answer and the real solution lies in such actions. But I think it's break time here now, ladies and gentlemen, so we'll leave it there for now, and we'll go and have a break. And I'll speak to you again in a few minutes. Thanks for listening. And welcome back, folks. Now, for most of the show today, I've been focusing on the concepts of justice and conscience and the need for a community spirit, because it's in this community spirit that we will find our ultimate defense against the fictional system that currently enslaves us, and that is getting tighter and tighter all the time. And when we have this community spirit, folks, we can address every single problem that we're facing, because ultimately the problems that we're facing, I've said before, are all symptoms of the one problem, which is the corruption of the system. And that corruption is only there because we don't have this community spirit. Even with cases such as Chappelle Corby being held in an Indonesian jail, suffering all types of abuse while she's in there. And this is a jail, folks, that's designed to hold 323 people, and it currently has 1,000 prisoners in there. And Chappelle Corby is completely innocent. And we can write to our governments about this information. We can write to the governments. We can send them copies of Expendable all we like. And we should do this, and we should keep doing this, and we should let these people know exactly how we feel about it. But ultimately, what will turn the tide is community action. It's when the people within the community decide that we're simply not going to comply with this anymore, and we're going to stop what we're doing, and we're going to turn and face the government and instruct them to fix the problem. Not petition them, not ask them, but to treat them like our employees, because that's what they are, and to instruct them, to let them know that it is our will that this problem be immediately dealt with. And don't tell me that the Australian government is not able to talk to the Indonesian government and at least have Chappelle Corby transferred back to Australia, and then have the case reopened and all of the evidence actually submitted. Don't tell me they don't have the power to do this, because they do. And what they also have the power to do is to approach the Indonesian government and say, hey, there's all this evidence that wasn't submitted, which indicates that this woman is innocent, and we would like you to look at this evidence and reconsider her case, and please release her into our custody, pending a full investigation of the circumstances that ended up with her incarceration. Now, our government has the power to do this, but they're not going to do it unless they are instructed to do so by the people. And again, folks, this isn't something that we need to petition. This isn't something that we need to request. This is an action that we need to mandate to our government that they carry out. Because ultimately, we the people of the country hold sway. We are the country. We are the nation of Australia. We hold all the cards. And the reason our country is in the state it's in, the reason Queensland's being sold off to Chinese mining interests and the place is being fracked, the reason 90% of Australia's food bowl is earmarked for either a coal mine or a gas field, is because the people of Australia have been negligent in their duty to hold their government to accountability. And the same goes for the case of Schapelle Corby. The same goes for all of the problems that we face, folks. The problems of people being evicted because they haven't paid their mortgages due to the fact that this system has forced them into a state of complete disrepair and impoverishment. And you can't blame the people for being in that way because it's the system itself that has imposed these difficulties upon the people that exist within our society. But, I mean, you can talk about it all day, really, and what it all comes down to, again and again, is community. And what that comes down to, folks, is energy. It comes down to the type of energy you're in. It comes down to your personal willingness to put all of that stuff away and to connect with the people around you, to view other people as valid, to view other people as yourself. It all comes down to the removal of fear, doesn't it, ultimately? And folks, I think we're going to be seeing a lot of really interesting stuff this year that is going to make all of this government legislation and all of the war on terror and all of these things kind of pale into insignificance. As I mentioned earlier in the show, the energy of the whole matrix is just palpable at the moment. It really is. The sun is doing some particularly interesting things as well. And I think we're going to see some very, very interesting solar activity later in this year. So that'll be something to look out for. And ultimately, folks, I think we're in for a hell of a ride in the next 12 months. And it's going to be extremely important that people maintain their energy through this year and maintain a high vibration, a high frequency this year. I think that is the most important thing of all. In fact, I've always thought it was the most important thing, folks, because it's in maintaining this high frequency, this high level of connection with the world around you and connection with the people around you and this state of giving and this state of empathy that we can make the transition that we want to make. Because when you are in that energetic state and you apply it to the world around you, then all of this corruption simply can't exist. And that's how we will ultimately defeat everything that is being thrust against us, I believe. And it isn't even a matter of defeating it. It's a matter of stepping away from it, a matter of transcending it. Because, as I keep saying, it's basically all fiction anyway. And even in the case of Schapelle Corby, folks, when I look at the information surrounding the case, I can get furious. I absolutely can. I look at the politicians and I get so angry with what these people have done. But by doing so, I kind of fall into the trap. Because if I'm going to address the plight of Schapelle Corby and I'm going to do it from a state of anger towards the system, then I'm simply playing into their game. I'm playing into the fictional struggle. Because the case shouldn't be approached from a state of anger towards the system. The case should be approached from a state of love and empathy towards Schapelle Corby. A state of love and empathy towards the whole human race. And the realization that injustice towards one person is injustice towards all. You see, I don't speak out for Schapelle Corby and I don't speak out against the system because I want to bring the system down. I do it because it's the right thing to do. I do it because conscience dictates that this is what I must do. And the whole thing can be approached responsibly by simply removing fear. I mean, I'm not afraid to speak out about what's going on. I'm not afraid to speak out about the evidence that proves her innocent. I'm not afraid to speak out about the evidence that implicates guilt on behalf of the Australian government and the Australian Federal Police. I mean, I don't have to point the finger at them. They pointed at themselves by their obfuscation of the evidence that could have kept Schapelle Corby out of jail. So that's a given. But I have no fear of standing up and speaking the truth. And if there is legislation that claims to be law, which has been put in place, which presumes the right to prevent me from speaking the truth, then I will very openly question the validity of such legislation. It doesn't matter if it calls itself law, because obviously if it serves to obfuscate the truth, then it is not law in any shape or any form. It is simply named law by those who legislated it into existence. And that's something that I've covered in quite detail on other shows, folks, is that there seems to be a blurred line in people's minds in distinguishing between that which is lawful and that which is legal. When the truth of the matter is that within the current judicial system, the two are almost as distant from each other as chalk is from cheese. And folks, the judicial system freely admits this of its own accord. I mean, as I mentioned earlier, a judge or a lawyer will often say to you that the court system is not about justice, it's about the law. But of course, as we've seen within this context, the judges themselves are failing to differentiate between that which is lawful and that which is legal. But nevertheless, folks, I am not afraid to speak out, nor will I ever be afraid to speak out, because what I will never be afraid to do is to speak the truth. And essentially, a very long time ago, I made a conscious decision never to do anything other than that which my conscience dictates to be just. And that's why I really don't have any problem speaking out against the government the way I do, folks, because I believe it is just to do so. Because justice is something that we certainly don't see from our governments. In fact, it seems to have been eliminated from our social and legal systems virtually altogether. And I just have no fear of these people, folks. I really don't. In fact, I try to push them to the limit sometimes in some of these radio shows. I'm actually surprised that they still let me continue speaking, but I suppose they do that because they don't want me to have to go to court to present my arguments to them, because they probably don't really have any defense against the things that I would say to them. I mean, they may have some legal defense, but I certainly doubt that they have any moral or any lawful defense. Because morals and a respect for law seems to be something that our governments have cast by the wayside a very long time ago. It's very difficult to imagine the mindset of these people, folks. It really is. It's very difficult to attempt to view the world from the perspective of some of these politicians and lawmakers. It just seems incomprehensible that these people cannot see the damage they are doing to the world and the type of future they are creating for their children and their grandchildren. When you realize that all of these people have families and they all have children, then their actions quite literally defy all analysis. But then I suppose they believe that if they gather enough paper to themselves and get enough credits in the bank, and they train their children to never think outside of the box, then they will be safe. But they seem to fail to take into account the environmental damage they are doing and the world that they are creating through their actions. It's always been amazing for me to see people put money before reality, put money before the environment, and put money before nature. Perhaps the Cree Indians were right, and it will not be until the last tree has been cut down and the last fish has been caught that people will finally realize that money cannot be eaten. And they just never seem to let up, folks. I mean, the whole muscle flexing that's going on in regard to Syria and Iran at the moment, it seems that the United States and Israel are determined to start World War III. no matter what the cost. And that itself is a remarkable mindset for people to have. And it's very difficult for me to comprehend the amount of fear these people must live in their daily lives. I mean, just to come up with these concepts, folks, it's kind of bizarre, but I suppose there's another way of looking at it as well, because if you look at the world as a global business, and you look at it, as I've mentioned occasionally, if you can view the New World Order as kind of like a giant version of Walmart, just spreading itself out into one big global corporation, then you can see why these wars take place. And you can see that it's not actually about freedom. It's not about Iran having nuclear energy. It's not about freeing anybody from oppression. It's about the homogenization of business on Earth. It's about creating a uniform corporate structure across the entire globe, whereby everybody is subject to the same corporate agenda, and whereby the system itself is made sustainable. See, that's what sustainability is all about, folks. It's about sustaining the system. It's not about the sustainability of nature. It's about sustaining the corporate system as efficiently as possible and continuing to base reality on an economic model which is designed to extract every resource from the planet that the planet has. See, that's what the system is. And so it isn't until you look at the world from that type of perspective that you can actually see why these wars happen, why countries are marginalized as much as they are. And people are just fed disinformation about it all. And people are fed a bizarre concept and a bizarre version of reality. I saw a recent article where Bill Gates says he wants to digitize agriculture. He wants to put satellites all over the world. He wants to put beacons basically all over the world. And he wants to be able to control global agriculture digitally through a satellite array and genetically engineered crops. And you get people that have a mainstream education and they look at this and they say, well, that's great. This is excellent. This is a way of improving global hunger. But they don't realize that global hunger isn't there because there's a shortage of food. Global hunger is there because of the economic model that food is forced to operate in. Global hunger is there because it makes good economic sense for it to be there. And we don't need genetically modified crops and a satellite array to address global hunger. What we need is an honest monetary system. That's the problem. It's got nothing to do with the amount of food. We have the ability to grow food almost everywhere, and we have the ability to feed all of the people on Earth. The only thing that prevents us from doing so is the cost. And that cost is only as high as it is because of the economic model and the monetary system that the people of Earth are forced to adhere to. That's the problem. So we don't need digital surveillance and we don't need GM crops. Thank you, Mr. Gates. What we need is an honest monetary system. And of course, it would also help if we had honest governments to implement this monetary system and governments that actually knew their place as public servants and that allowed mankind to reach its fullest potential and for every person within the world to be all that they can be. So yes, thank you very much, but we don't need your satellite surveillance system or your Frankenfood in order to improve reality. In fact, we need the very opposite. And folks, it's people like Bill Gates that blow me out more than anything because he's a man who actually has enough money to literally be able to change the world. But it seems that by his actions, all he really wants to do is to refine the operations of the machine. And the machine is just getting more and more in your face, folks. Every day that goes by, there just seems to be more of it. We've seen a lot of trouble in Aboriginal communities in Western Australia over the last week. We've seen the tent embassy in Perth get pulled down and the people within it moved on by the police. And this is, of course, going on while the Kevin Rudd, Julia Gillard leadership challenge is grabbing most of people's attention. They always put out these sorts of issues to distract you folks so you don't notice what's actually going on behind the curtain. And you can be guaranteed, you can be absolutely sure that if there is some major story that is taking up the headlines in your country, then the real issues are taking place behind the scenes in the other direction that you are not looking in at that time. It's very, very interesting when you're presented with these big media stories, because you'll soon begin to see that this is actually what happens. You'll get a leadership challenge, or you'll get people worried about a war here or an economic event there. And meanwhile, there's some piece of legislation being slipped in, or there's some other country that's just been invaded they didn't tell you about, or some other people that have been dispossessed, or perhaps Israel has just commenced another bombing raid on Gaza, or something. There's always something that the left hand is doing while the right hand is distracting you. The shock and awe campaign and the invasion of Iraq in 2003 was a perfect example of this, folks, because while that invasion was happening, there was an unprecedented bombing raid launched against Palestine by Israel. And of course they got away with it because nobody was looking. And another good example is the NDAA, the National Defence Authorization Act, which was signed into law on December 31st of last year on New Year's Eve. And it's always this type of sleight of hand that is used, folks. They always bring in something when you're not looking. They're very good at it. And as I said, it is very telling if you can view the news this way. If you see a big major story happening, go and have a look on page 3, or go and have a look at some of the alternate news sites and have a look at what they're sneaking in while the nation is distracted, because there's always something. But we're getting close to the end of the show here, folks. I've been extremely busy in the last month as well. I did hope to have the film Transformation finished by the end of February in order to release it at the end of February or early March, but I simply haven't had a chance to work on it in the last few weeks. I've done an enormous amount of radio shows and interviews, and I've also been focusing very heavily on the issue of Chappelle Corby, a woman who has been in jail now for 8 years due to the corruption of the Australian government, and that has taken up a great deal of my time in the last month. And there's also been some ongoing family issues that very much need addressing as well. So a lot of this has taken up my time. So I'm afraid you'll just have to sit and wait for the release of the film, folks. I was actually thinking of releasing it in two parts, because I have got parts one and parts two completely finished already. I'm about 3/4 of the way through part three and a little bit over halfway through part four. So I was actually thinking of releasing the film in two parts, but I've since reconsidered that, and I'll be holding off and releasing it all in one go, because I think it will be more effective that way. So my apologies, folks, for the time it's taking me to get the thing finished, and it isn't because it's any type of spectacular production, it's just simply finding the time to work on it, because there has been so much going on that has demanded my attention in these last months and weeks. So thank you for bearing with me on that. I do hope to have a few guests on the show over the next month, so that will take up a little bit of the slack. I'm hoping to have a man from Darwin, Australia here come on maybe next week or the week after to give us all the lowdown on what's happening with the intervention in the Northern Territory. And for those of you who are not aware of what the intervention is, it's actually a very racist piece of legislation that was imposed in the Northern Territory in Australia, which basically sets limits on what the Aboriginal people can do. This was done under the guise of protecting Aboriginal children from the rampant child abuse that is allegedly so prevalent in the Northern Territory, but which, of course, does not exist in any way, shape, or form. And what the intervention is actually doing is opening up Aboriginal land to mining companies, and there's all sorts of things that are being snuck in under the carpet in the Northern Territory that I'm sure will gradually find their way out to the rest of Australia. For example, Codex Alimentarius is very, very big in the Northern Territory. Apparently, if one goes into supermarkets in Darwin, virtually everything in the supermarkets is now Codex compliant. Even the water that you buy in the supermarket shelves, water that is apparently spring water, is marked as being Codex Alimentarius compliant. So one may well wonder what is actually in this water. See, a lot of people thought Codex went away because it didn't come in December 31st, 2009. And the reason it didn't come in across the board and was not publicly announced was because of the amount of protests and the amount of people speaking out against Codex. And so they kind of swept the whole thing under the carpet. But what's going on in Darwin is all directly related to Codex. And what's going on with the new food bill they're attempting to bring in New Zealand is also directly related to Codex Alimentarius. And you'll find this across the board. Food bills they're bringing in Canada, in the United States, regulations that they want to bring in England. It all comes down to Codex Alimentarius, folks. So don't think that Codex has gone away, because it most certainly has not. It's simply been broken down into many, many smaller compartments that are all being brought in individually. But Codex is still very much alive and well in the world today. So don't think it's gone away, folks. Maintain your vigilance against what is happening with the food regulations in your country. And by all means, if you hear of any new bills or anything related to food coming in your country, please don't hesitate to visit thecrowhouse.com and send me an email and let me know what's going on, and I'll make sure that it gets posted on the website. The website has received some reasonably major updates lately, folks. There's a lot of new links there. And there are now whole sections devoted to climate change, to geoengineering or chemtrails, and the various cancer cures that exist that have been suppressed from the public. So please check out the website when you have time. There's also a new headline section, which gets updated almost every day. But again, folks, I try not to put just anything on the website. I try to ensure that all the information that's posted there is stuff that you absolutely need to see. It's all must-see information. I don't just kind of grab any headline I find and put it on there because it's interesting. I put it on there because it all shows how the agenda is progressing. And there's also a very substantial articles archive, which houses every article that has ever been posted on the Crow House. Anything that was ever on the headlines page, it was on the main page, all of these things can now be found in the article archives. And you'll find a link for that at the bottom of the headline section on the crowhouse.com homepage. I'd like to also put out a thank you for anybody who has ever helped with the website, anybody who has ever offered a donation to the website. And the more you can help at the moment, the better, because I am very much attempting to get the information regarding Chappelle Corby out to a great majority of the population. I'd like to create as many DVDs of the film Expendable as possible and give them out to as many people as possible. I'm still trying to get my hands on a printer, something that will print DVDs for me, because I've found that it's better to label these things if you can. So thank you for any help you can give me, and thank you for any help that you have given me in the past. The website would most certainly not exist were it not for the contributions of the listeners such as yourself. So thank you very much. But that is it for me today, folks. We are completely out of time. Thank you very much for spending this time with me today. I'll look forward to speaking to you again next week. Please take care until then. In La Cache.